Okay, so I'm very glad to thank the organizers for giving me an opportunity of speaking here, and it's a great honor for me to give the first lecture of this meeting. So in fact, today I will speak about things which are on one hand quite simple, on the other hand sometimes a little bit old-fashioned, and on the third hand a little bit old altogether, so I hope and I'm sure to meet an indulgent audience. So let me first start with the definition. Let me recall that a compact set K is called a Rosenthal compact if it is homeomorphic to a compact subset of B1 of P. B1 denotes a set of first bad-class functions on a Polish space P. Polish means, of course, metrizable, separable, and complete. And first bad-class, in that case, simply means Pontoise limit of a sequence of continuous functions. I'm considering real-valued functions in this case. So the name obviously comes from Haskell Rosenthal's famous little L1 theorem, which really started the precise study of these class of compact sets. So let me give a few examples. First, it's a very easy exercise to see that every metrizable compact is Rosenthal. Simply consider the set of Dirac measures, which is, of course, homeomorphic to K in the weak star topology. This is a space, in fact, of continuous function on the space CK, which is Polish when K is metrizable. We will use, of course, this obvious map a lot, but maybe in a slightly less trivial way later. Well, a second example, which is very classical and probably studied as early as the 1920s, I guess, is a Helly compact, which is a set of all functions from 0,1 to 0,1, which are increasing, equipped with the Pontoise topology. This is, of course, a compact set of first bad-class function, and it's already a non-metrizable example. Of particular importance is the set of all extreme points of the Helly compact, which can be identified with the set segment 0,1 times the pair 0,1 with a lexicographical order. This is a very famous two arrows space. And this compact plays a central role in the structural study of Rosenthal compact. I refer you to a recent and very deep work by Stevo Todosevich using forcing arguments, where he is really providing structural theorems about Rosenthal compact, where again this compact set plays a big role. Well, one more example is the set, well, this is nearly H minus H. This is a set of all functions from 0,1 to itself, or to the real line. In fact, we don't care about this. So that F is 0 at 0, and the variation of F is at most equal to 1. Again, equipped with a Pontoise convergence in 0,1. Okay, now, of course, this last example for now is directly coming from Rosenthal's L1 theorem. This is the bidual unit ball of a separable space not containing L1 equipped with the weak star topology. Okay, now, what I will be talking about now is coming from a work from 1980, so I say it was not the most recent thing, so you can see I didn't apply in this one. This is where the obvious terminology was coined, actually. A little story goes with that article. It was written when I was working as a scientific attaché in the French embassy in Tunis, northern Africa, in 1979. And my job had nothing to do with mathematics there, and it was absolutely impossible to have anything typed, especially with math. So the paper was submitted as a handwritten paper, and moreover in French, to Pacific Journal of Math, and it was accepted as such. So, okay, these were, of course, different times. You know, now when something is not a tech file, it's simply turned down immediately. But since the referee of the paper is probably in this room, I take this opportunity to express my belated gratitude to him for this for this acceptance. As you can see from my transparencies, I'm still technologically impaired anyway. Okay. Pardon me? They printed the handwriting. I mean, I was told at the time by the journal, if you want to know more about the story, that the people working there were Japanese, and they were not familiar at all with French, so I had to write very, very carefully. But they did a splendid job with it. Okay, so now let me recall again some very familiar notation. It's familiar but pretty dark. Okay, so let me... My lecture will be obscure enough without this, I'm afraid. So E, a metrizable space, is analytic, so I will denote it by σ11 according to the descriptive set theory terminology. If there exists a map from N to the end, a set of irrational numbers in 0,1 on E, which is continuous, and on 2. So this is a familiar definition of analytic set, which goes back to Lusin and Suessling. And now if I have a filter on the set of natural numbers, F, of course, is in particular is a subset of the set of all subsets of the natural number, and this is where the natural topology is a Cantor set. So it makes perfect sense to speak about an analytic filter. A filter is analytic exactly when it is an analytic subset of P of N. So for instance, if you take a filter with a countable basis, it is obviously K sigma and therefore analytic. On the other hand, if you take a Yotra filter, it's an observation which goes back to Sierpinski, I think, that this is not analytic or even anything close to it. Okay, now if K is a compact set, I denote by UK the filter of neighborhoods of the diagonal in K plus K. If you speak Borbakian, this is a set of all uniformities in K, the filter of entourage. I mean, this is the uniformity of K. But just think of it as a filter of neighborhoods of the diagonal. Okay, so if K is a separable compact space, we have the following very simple characterization of Rosenthal compact. K is a Rosenthal compact if and only if, for any Downs countable subset D of K, the trace over D cross D of the filter of uniformities in K, let me denote it by U of D, is an analytic filter, if and only if, for any Downs countable set, the space of continuous function over K equipped with a pointwise convergence over D is an analytic subset of R to the power D. So the theorem is so simple that I can sketch the proof. Let me say that more work along this line has been done by Witold Marciszewski, who designed the quantitative version of it. Quantitative, of course, is the transfinite meaning of the word. And there is also work by Ustasegi on this. Okay, so let me sketch a proof of this. It's, as I said, pretty simple. Well, here, if I have a Rosenthal compact, I want to check that U of D is analytic. What to do? Well, simply represent K as a space, as a set of first backlash function over some Polish space. Call enumerate Fn a dense countable set D, and consider this map from the Polish space times n into the subsets of D cross D, defined by psi of x and k is a set of all couples of functions satisfying this inequality. Okay, since the Fn are all Borel functions, this is very easy to check that this map is actually Borel. Now, this is a Polish topological space, and a Polish space is mapped to an analytic set by a Borel map. Okay, so this set psi of p times n is an analytic set. Now, it's easy to check that U of D is a filter generated by this analytic set. And it's, again, an easy exercise to check that an analytic set generates an analytic filter because intersection is continuous and the inclusion map has a compact graph in P of M. So the filter generated by this analytic set is itself analytic. Okay, now 2 implies 3. You have to check that if the filter UD is analytic, CK equipped with pointwise convergence in D is analytic as well. So this is a practically formal proof. I will not attempt to give it. What you need to say is simply that CK equipped with a pointwise convergence in D is simply the set of functions which are uniformly continuous with respect to the filter U of D. Then you write down what it means to be uniformly continuous, and you check analyticity just by direct computation. I mean, there is no difficulty here. Well, now the last implication, if CK equipped with pointwise convergence over D is analytic, let me call this set A. While you have a natural map, you have the obvious map from K to the set of all functions from CK into the real line, which maps K to the Dirac measure. Okay? But now you decide to equip this set with the topology to P of D. So what happens? Well, if you consider it, if you consider epsilon K as a function over A, of course, for all K in D, this function is continuous by the very definition of the topology of A. And now if X is in K, consider D prime to be D union the singleton X. While CK equipped with a pointwise convergence on this extended set D prime is analytic as well, from this you can check pretty easily that the trace of a D of the filters of neighborhood of X is actually analytic again. Okay, just write down what this filter is. Some work has to be done here, but provided you believe into the statement, you prove it in less than 5 minutes. I mean, there is absolutely no obstruction here. And now you use the following fact, you know, which is extending the obvious fact that the set of Borel function is stable by a limit of sequences. If you have a sequence of Borel function on an analytic set, if F is the limit of Fm along an analytic filter, then F is Borel. It's an application of the separation theorem. This can be used from time to time because, well, concrete filters in analysis are very often analytic. I mean, this is not a surprise. Okay? So this can be useful in various contexts to know that Borel is stable under this property. Okay, now once we know this, if you see what this is actually meaning, K is a compact set of Borel function, and D is consisting, is dense in K, and it's consisting of continuous functions. Now, if K is made of Borel function and continuous functions are dense into it, then it's actually made of first Backhouse function. This is one of the nice results with many more, which is in the paper by Bourguin, Fremlin, and Palagouin, who followed Rosenthal's work and really set the classics on Rosenthal's impact. Okay, so one application of this is that the class of separable Rosenthal compact is not stable under a continuous image. So let me briefly check a proof of this, sketch a proof of this. Again, we start with the two-aral space, I with a lexicographical order. And this compact space has a lot of very natural images, which I denote by IX in here. What we do is simply identifying the points when X is outside the set capital X. You know, in the two-aral space, every point is blow in two, and I decide to blow in two only those which are actually belonging to X. Okay, so the compact I obtain is, of course, a continuous image of the two-aral space. And now, of course, I do this with a set X, which is not analytic, a subset of 0, 1, which is not analytic. Well, now let me consider this space F. Well, F, I wrote it explicitly in here, but if you like, this is simply the set of all functions from ix into 0,1, which are increasing. So this set is closed in CK, equipped with Pontoise topology and a dense subset. Okay, but on the other hand, F maps continuously onto X. Okay, therefore F is not σ11. Okay, but now I have a set which is closed in this topological space CK with Pontoise convergence over D, and which is not σ11, which is not analytic. Therefore, this set itself is not analytic. Okay, this K should be I of X, of course. This set itself is not analytic, and therefore I of X is not a Rosenthal compact. Okay, this can be improved, in fact, as soon as K is not metrizable, it has a continuous image which is not Rosenthal. So only in the trigonal case is it stable under a continuous image. On the other hand, if you wish to consider continuous and open maps, then strangely enough, the class is stable. If the map is open, you can use those techniques to show that the range is still Rosenthal. Well, I should take this opportunity to mention a very interesting recent work by two colleagues from New Zealand, Warren Morth and Sivaja Somasundaram. They showed recently the existence of a differentiability space which is not a weak Aspen space. This was a question open for a long time and considered for at least 20 years. So there is a Banach space so that every convex function is Gatow smooth on a dense set, but this dense set is not necessarily residual. Okay, this is a very nice result which they showed a few months ago. I mean, I heard a lecture by Warren Morth in Newcastle last month about it. And actually, the spacer they construct is continuous function on such calendar compact IX. I will return on this in a moment, where X is the complicated subset of 0,1. They had first an example outside ZFC, and it was brought into ZFC, I think, by David Tremblay. They got in touch with him. No? Oh, maybe I'm wrong, but okay. David seems to protest, so I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure they didn't tell me any of this.
Okay, I'm not completely wrong then. In any case, there is an example in ZFC of this, and it's a very nice recent work about and the solution of an important question of differentiability using precisely these compact sets. Okay, now let me continue with, well, pretty easy consequences of what has been done. Sorry again. I used to forget this roughly one every second transparency, roughly. I'll see whether I can keep my usual average. Okay, so if K is a Rosenthal compact, then the set of probabilities over K is also a Rosenthal compact. Well, how to do this? Well, we simply use the obvious duality between CK and Rudolph measure in K. So you see, if you consider this duality as a set theoretical one, the set of probabilities is of course compact for Pontoise convergence over CK. Well, if you equip CK with a norm topology, this is a very big space. It's not separable. And so probabilities appear as a space, a compact space of continuous function on a non-separable space. But you can play the game differently. If you weaken the topology over CK, then the space gets smaller. I mean, concretely, it gets analytic. But now you lose continuity on the other side, but you still keep the first Bethe-class behavior. Okay, so again, you can really play with such a duality. And this is what we do here, of course. That is, this space is, of course, the Pontoise closed convex hull of the Dirac measures. But now if you equip CK with the topology of Pontoise convergence over D, this is what I denote by CD of K, this set of Dirac measure is a set of first Bethe-class function, and now you can use the convexal theorem of Vauguin, Fremlin, and Talagrand to deduce that this set is also a set of first backlash function over this analytic set, and therefore it is a Rosenthal compact. Okay, so it's just a formal corollary of the convexal theorem of the famous BFT paper. Okay, so one corollary is that, of course, if mu is a Radon measure, I gave the proof, I should insist on this, I gave the proof here when K is separable, okay, because I'm using the fact that this is analytic. When K is non-separable, there is an argument which was lended to me by Michel Talagrand, which allows to complete the proof in without assuming separability over K. Okay, now a corollary is that if you have a Radon measure and a Rosenthal compact, then its support is separable. Well, it's not quite trivial because there is this non-separable Rosenthal compact, like the Alexandrov compactification of a discrete set of cardinality C. Okay, but why is that so? Well, just because you use the fact that mu isn't the closure of a measure with finite support included in the support. Okay, and now in a Rosenthal compact, the closure and the sequential closure coincide. Okay, and therefore you get immediately that the support is separable. This result has been improved also by Stevo Todosevich recently. I refer you again to his paper in American Journal of Mathematics. Okay, well let me mention an alternative characterization, which is not a topological one, but a measure theoretical one. If you equip CK with a cylindrical sigma field, this is a sigma field generated by the dual space. Okay, it's called cylindrical for obvious reasons. I'm not sure it's a good terminology, but anyway, it's the usual one. Then K, if K is separable, it's Rosenthal exactly when this Borel set is Suslin. That is, when this set equipped with the sigma field cylindrical CK is Borel isomorphic to an analytic subset of the real line. Okay. One application of this is that if you take two separable compacts so that the weak Banach spaces CK1 and CK2 are homeomorphic, then if one is Rosenthal, the other one is Rosenthal. Well, for checking this, you use the fact that this was shown by Jerry Edgar, that the cylindrical sigma field is the sigma field generated by the weakly continuous function. Okay, and therefore, when those two spaces are homeomorphic, those two measurable spaces are Borel isomorphic, and therefore the Rosenthal property carries from one to the other. So you have very weak conditions. It's not only a joke, it's really a weak condition on CK, which are enough to have stability of the Rosenthal property, of the Rosenthal pass. Okay, let me give an application which is in fact, really purely an application of the Vauguin, Fremlin, Talagrand paper. If you take a Boolean subalgebra, which is analytic, then denote by AY the trace of this Boolean algebra over a subset of M, then we have the following dichotomy. Either there exists an infinite subset so that AY is equal to PY, or for any infinite subset, there is a further subset Z so that AY is a set of subsets which are finite or cofinite. Okay, how to prove this? Well, again, this is a formal corollary of what is well known. I mean, you just consider the Rademacher functions, if you like, the evaluation at the natural numbers as continuous function on this subalgebra A, that is, as a set of continuous function on this analytic set. And then what you have is that either you have a subset consisting of independent functions, and therefore you are in the first case, or the closure is a Rosenthal compact, and then you are in the second case. So this is, if you like, it's again as I said, a formal corollary of well-known results, but this is only to stress the Ramsey character of the Rosenthal-Bogafrom integral work. In fact, there is a proof of Rosenthal's Allemand theorem due to Farah, which is really relying directly on Ramsey type arguments. Again, concrete booleans of algebra are usually analytic, and therefore this can lead to some application. Well, let me now switch to things which are nearly as old, you know, it was published only 20 years ago, about representable Banach spaces. This is a joint work with Michel Tarragon. So this is only to kill some pathology which may occur in non-separable Banach spaces. Okay, unfortunately, all what I say is non-separable today. Okay, I'm sorry for several people who can be here. They will be disappointed by the whole thing. So let me start with the definition. A Banach space X is representable if it's linearly isomorphic to a subspace of an infinity which is analytic in R to the N, or equivalently analytic in the weak star topology. This is the same. Okay, it's meaning that X is not too weird. If X is more or less concrete, it will belong to this case. I should say, by the way, that what was done before, if you believe that every decent set is analytic, it's an opinion, but you may believe it in a free country, okay? If you believe that any decent set is analytic, you'll have that any explicit separable compact will be a Rosenthal compact. It may fail to be metrizable, but if you can somehow describe each of its elements, it will have to be Rosenthal, okay? This is where concreteness finishes, in a sense. I mean, this is, of course, questionable, but can maybe be said. So, okay, if the Banach space is decent, then we may hope it's representable. So let me give some examples of this. Well, if X is separable, of course, it is representable. It's K sigma delta in L infinity with this part topology. If X is dual to a separable space, it is representable as well. It's actually K sigma. Okay? And if X is a CK with K separable Rosenthal compact, it is representable. It follows, obviously, from what was done in the first part. Okay, now we have this useful proposition. If X is representable and not separable, then X contains a biorthogonal system of cardinalities and continuum. So you have a biorthogonal system which is witnessing the fact that X is non-separable. Okay, how to show this? Well, biorthogonal system, I guess we all know the definition. It's shortened by BS, you know, and this is to say that X alpha star over its beta is 1, if alpha is beta and 0 otherwise. Okay, and so how does the proof go? Well, this is simply taking Stigall's construction of the orthogonal system in non-separable dual spaces and realizing it works. Okay, I mean, I was told by Tarragon that usually what you can do with compact sets, you can do with analytic sets. Okay, and this is a good slogan to know. Okay, now, if you really see what we do here, we replace the weak star compactness of the dual ball by the analytic character of X equipped with weak star topology, and then you can mimic fully what Stigall did and get exactly the same result, okay, with really the same proof. Okay, well, now you have a structure theorem which I described now. If X is representable, then, well, one is really the previous statement. It is separable when it's not containing the orthogonal system with continuously many elements. And then X is what can be called universally separable, that is, every subspace isomorphic to X is analytic if and only if X is not containing little L1 of the continuum, if and only if the dual unit ball is a Rosenthal compact. So this demands a little bit more work. Okay, this first equivalence, I mean, B of X star Rosenthal compact, exactly when all isomorphic subspaces are analytic, is quite natural if you remember what was done in the first part. For the equivalence with not containing little L1, one needs a neat, very nice result of Talagon stating that L infinity is the quotient of X exactly when X star contains a weak star homeomorphic copy of beta n. Okay, this is a remarkable result he showed around 1980. Okay, if you have beta n in the dual space, then necessarily you have it linearly. That is, you have L infinity as a quotient of X, and then you can map beta n just by the transpose operator. Okay, so this is what you need to show condition 2. Okay, let me give one corollary of this result. Keep forgetting this. If X is representable and non-separable, then there is a subspace X so that the quotient do not inject into an infinity, or if you like, there is a subspace which is not a countable closure of closed hyperplane. So how to show this? Well, if L1 of C is into X and L infinity is a quotient, and therefore an infinity over C0 as well, and it is, of course, very well known that L infinity over C0 does not inject into L infinity. In the other case, what you do is coming back again to this funny approach with measurable sets. If X does not contain little L1 of C, then X equipped with a cylindrical sigma field is a Suslin Borel space. Okay? In particular, the Suslin sigma field only has C elements. Okay? The cylindrical sigma field only has C elements. Okay, now if X over Y embeds into L infinity, Y is a countable intersection of hyperplanes. And therefore, Y belongs to the cylindrical sigma field. There are not so many of them, only C of them. But on the other hand, X contains a biorthogonal system with C elements, and therefore it has 2 to the power C subspaces. So that's a very direct cardinality argument. Okay, simply because 2 to the C is greater than C. Okay, I will try to explain why this statement is of some interest. And in this, in a subsequent work with Louvaux, we were able to weaken the assumption here. I mean, what we weaken is a representability assumption. That is, this representability means analytic. Okay, you can go into the projective hierarchy if you are ready to believe into some determinacy etching. Okay, that is, using a game theoretical approach and of course some axioms of set theory like inaccessible LF1s, then you can replace representable by belonging to the projective hierarchy called the weak star topology. So again, it depends where your descensi stops. Okay, if your descensi stops at sigma 1,2, sigma 1,3, or even worse, then you can still go with some axioms in your bag. Well, I should use now, I mean, this chance to mention a very nice and much deeper result by Stevo Todosevic. Under Martin's axioms and the negation of continuum hypothesis, every non-separable CK space with K zero-dimensional contains an uncountable biorthogonal system. So this is really changing the world, okay? Now we are not using something saying that, okay, K is decent enough, you have analytic sets around you can work with. No. Every non-separable CK, while K is still being zero-dimensional, has an uncountable biorthogonal system. If you drop the zero-dimensional restriction, then you have some epsilons around that Stevo could be able to kill someday, but they are still alive. The best of my knowledge. Okay, I will try to see later, well, in fact now, why this is so important. Well, it's very important when compared with this theorem by Kenneth Kunin, saying that under the continuum hypothesis, there is a separable scatter non-metrizable compact, so that each time you get an uncountable subset of CK, one of the vectors you pick is in the non-closed convexal of the rest. Okay, so this is very, very different. It says that you have nothing resembling the orthogonal system, even from far. Okay, so really, the universe does depend a lot of your choices in this business. Okay, this result by Todosevich says that under MA, things go in a completely different direction compared with Kunin example. And this example by Kunin is important for Banach spaces. So this is why probably I will return on this in a moment, why this is important. Okay, now, well, remember that if you have a representable space, you have subspaces which with this property. Now if you take X to be the Kunin space, then for every y contained into x, x over y embeds into an infinity. That is, this space is so strange that although it is non-separable, every subspace is a contable intersection of closed hyperplanes. I mean, one way to do that is to show, and there's a proof is not very difficult, that as soon as you have a subspace so that the quotient does not inject into an infinity, you can construct a bi-orthogonal system, in fact. So knowing that you have no bi-orthogonal system implies this property. Okay, so why is it important for renorming people? Well, because of this nice result by Mar Jimenez and Pepe Moreno, published in 93, I guess, in GFA. If you have Kunin's property, Kunin property is what I wrote before with the convex hull. If you pick an A equivalent norm on X, the dual unit ball with weak star topology is separable, okay? And it follows from this that X has no norm with Mazur intersection property. So, well, maybe I should elaborate a little bit on this. Well, first of all, I should say one word about how Mar Jimenez and Pepe Moreno managed to do that. Well, what they did, I mean, I have a little room here for a very, very small picture. What they did is the following observation. If you consider this picture, okay, you have two vectors, x and y, two linear forms, f and g. Well, this picture is somehow, well, it's an extremely fuzzy one in many ways. Okay, I hope it's sufficient anyway. This picture is self-dual. That is, if you can do this down in the space, then you have exactly the same up in the dual space, except, of course, that f and g are now the vectors, and x and y are now the linear form. Okay? This is a simple geometrical idea I did not have when working on this. You know, I was, not aware that this simple argument was leading so far. Now, while down in x, when you have Kunin property, you cannot do that with RF1 vectors, okay? Now, if you look in the dual space, you cannot do that with RF1 linear forms as well, because this picture is self-dual, okay? And now this is implying that if you consider the non-closed linear span of the stars from the exposed point, this thing has to be separable. If it were not separable, you could do that upstairs with RF1 linear forms, okay? And therefore, you have this very strange property. This thing is not metrizable, but it is nearly hereditarily separable. Okay. And it, from this follows the existence of an Aspen space with no norm with the Mazur's intersection property, provided, of course, you believe in 2CH. I will return on this in a moment. No one knows, to the best of my knowledge, whether there is a smooth bump on Kunin space. Some people spend sweat on this, but without result so far. Okay, now let me briefly mention a special kind of the orthogonal system, which are called Markushevitz basis. Well, a orthogonal system is a Markushevitz basis if it somehow resembles a basis. X is an enclosing our span of the X alphas, and the intersection of the kernels is zero. Okay? Of course, I will speak of an M basic set if it's an M basis of the linear span. So this is not so easy to find. I mean, and this was one work published in 89 of Catherine Fina and myself, which gave the further classification result about representable spaces. If X is representable, then the following are equivalent. First, well, was already said, it is separable exactly when there is no uncountable, the orthogonal system, and I can even say C instead of uncountable in here. X does not contain little L1 of C if and only if X contains no uncountable M basic set. X contains little L1 of C if and only if X contains an uncountable the orthogonal system, so that the intersection of the kernels is actually zero. Okay, so what can I say about this? Well, 2 is using a nice argument of Suarez, which I will not give in detail now for lack of time. And 3 is using 1973 theorem by Davis and Johnson for constructing if X is containing little L1 of C such an uncountable the orthogonal system. In particular, of course, you have an uncountable M basic set, which is just X alpha star, if this condition holds true. Okay, so it seemed that as far as the orthogonal systems are concerned, representable spaces are relatively well understood by now. So explicit non-separable spaces are well behaving. Let me take this chance to mention this suggestion by Tim Gowers after his 1994 presentation in the International Congress, whether there would exist a class of, say, explicit separable Banach spaces that would behave a little better than the arbitrary spaces. I mean, this, of course, should go along very different lines than what I explained today, but this is still a suggestion of some interest. Maybe, I mean, construction of HI spaces and other spaces by Gowers and Moray were using very lacunary sequences and so on. It would be great, although I don't know how it could look like, to have some statement that would say if X is decent, then it's containing something good like a reflexive subspace C0 or L1 or something like this. But there is still probably a lot of work to do before knowing what to say behind decent in this direction. Okay, so now let me give maybe one last statement about this before suggesting some problems. A remark which follows from the very special, so I keep my average 1/2. I guess. Okay, so this is better, I hope. So this is just a very special case of what is done before. I mean, knowing that if X is separable here, the dual of X is a representable space. If X separable does not contain L1 and X star is non-separable, X star does not contain uncountable and basic sets. So this is simply to stress the fact, you know, the classical thing is to say that X star does not contain little L1 of C. You can extend little L1 of C to uncountable and basic. That's a very simple statement, but this is to stress the fact, the feeling, I would say, that under this assumption, X star is something like a twisted sum, okay? A twisted sum. That is, this type of situation is putting you away from the lattice business and from anything resembling the lattice. Okay? So you simply cannot construct, you have the orthogonal system because you have Stegall's theorem, but you cannot organize them as Marcuse-Levy basic sets, okay, which say something about this type of spaces. Okay, now let me suggest, I mean, I call it problems, I should say, just direction for further work. Well, Stable's work is really suggesting positive results, I mean, provided you believe into Martin's axiom. That is, I mean, I mentioned what he did for CK, but he actually already has results for general Banach spaces, except that there is an epsilon around, but this epsilon is probably not killing too much. So it would be great for renorming people, there are some of them in this room, I think, including myself, it would be great to have some positive renorming results in the universe where you have Martin's axiom and the negation of continuum hypothesis. For instance, it does not seem totally impossible that under Martin's axiom, every Aspen space would have a norm with a Mazur intersection property. I don't dare calling it a conjecture, but this cannot be excluded, and of course that would be great, okay? You have something positive and moreover something positive related with axioms of set theory, you know. On the other hand, it would also be great to have an example in ZFC of an Aspen space without the Mazur intersection property. That is what Khodorcevich result is teaching us, is that the use of continuum hypothesis is not a convenience in this business. It seems to be really deep into the proof. At least this is my understanding. Okay, now let me recall that the compact set IX is a two-arrow space, but where the points have been blown up only for the points into X. X is a subset of 0, 1. So these compact sets are called Kalenda compact by Morse and his co-author, because they were studied recently by Andrzej Kalenda in Prague. So I think not too much is known about, at least I don't know much, about the classification of those compact sets up to homeomorphism or of the relevant continuous spaces of continuous functions, I mean. I wrote in this old paper in Pacific Journal of Math that there are 2C of them non-homeomorphic. But please discard this observation. I mean, I don't think I had any decent proof of this. So this is simple nonsense. I mean, it may be true, but I don't know. What is clear is that there are certainly several of them. In particular, remember for what was done before, that when X is not analytic, I of X is not a Rosenthal compact, and therefore C of I of X is certainly not isomorphic to C of the full two-arrow space. So this classification is at least non-trivial. Okay? For instance, maybe just to give one conjecture, maybe, it may be so that C of IX is isomorphic to C of I exactly when X is analytic and uncountable. At least the isomorphism is forcing X to be analytic because what was done before. And maybe the converse is nearly true, but I don't know. And this is, it looks like a very natural thing to try. Okay, one third suggestion is trying to prove Rosenthal's BFT dichotomy with games. Okay, so here I don't know whether, and I'm not an expert about topological games, much less than many people in this room, I don't know whether there is a real obstruction or not for this. I was told by some experts that Ramsey theorems and games are not getting along too well together, and I was told by other experts that it should work. So the answer is that I simply ask the question whether we have a chance to do this or not. One motivation for this is that if you are ready to work with co-analytic set, complement of analytic, what they call pi-1-1 in descriptive set theory, to the best of my knowledge, it is not known whether continuous function on co-analytic sets lead to this kind of dichotomy. If there would be a proof of this dichotomy using games, one may hope that at least with the determinacy axioms, we can extend the dichotomy to more general based spaces and analytic. Okay, so there is some motivation for this. And maybe the proof could look nice if there is such a proof.
What do you mean by this dichotomy?
Well, I would say, for instance, that either a sequence of function as a Boolean independent subsequence, that is, the weak part closure is beta n, or the closure is consisting of Breuer function. I mean, this is what I had in mind. One last suggestion, which in fact was given to me by Robert de Ville, and I don't quite know what can be done with this except that it looks attractive. You take a continuous function from 0, 1 to 0, 1. If you wish, you think of it as a dynamical system. It looks fancy these days. And you call fn, f composed with itself n times. So you have a sequence of functions from 0, 1 to 0, 1, of continuous functions, of course. And you can apply the dichotomy to this sequence. The pointwise closure is containing beta n, or any subsequence as a pointwise convergent subsequence, and so on. You can even hope of applying Marcisewski's quantitative arguments about Rosenthal compact. So I don't know whether such a thing can be done. The question might be considered in any case, but it would be great to think of application of all this deep material about Rosenthal compact sets to dynamical systems. To the best of my knowledge, this has not been tried, and why not trying? Okay, thank you very much for your